Welcome to Talking Global Infrastructure, brought to you by the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. Now more than ever, governments around the world are recognizing the importance of partnership with the private sector to deliver the transformational investment required to meet global challenges. But how do we deliver the enormous scale of investment needed to close the infrastructure gap in an affordable way, whilst addressing societal challenges such as net zero commitments, climate resilience, and the digital economy? GIIA and its members are at the forefront of this debate, and Talking Global Infrastructure is the podcast that will delve into these subjects and more to bring you valuable insights from the experts in the sector.
Hello, I'm Lawrence Slade, the Chief Executive of the Global Infrastructure Investor Association, and you're listening to the fourth installment of our podcast series, Talking Global Infrastructure. I'm delighted to be speaking with Paul Crowe this episode, and Paul is the Chief Investment Officer of Plenary Group Asia Pacific. And in this episode, we're going to be exploring Plenary's views on the importance of infrastructure as an asset class, and also talking through some of the challenges and some of the headwinds that the sector currently faces. So hi, Paul, and thank you very much for joining us, and welcome to the podcast. To get us started, perhaps you could give us a bit of an overview of Plenary and sort of some of the background to the organisations and the markets you operate in and the purpose.
Hi, Lawrence, and thanks for having us on your podcast. So the background to Plenary is we really are an infrastructure developer and long-term investor. We started in Australia in 2004 and then in Canada in 2005. And back in those early days, we really just focused on social infrastructure PPPs. But since then, we've evolved into a much bigger infrastructure business and are involved in a wide range of projects, and from small to very large scale, such as Sydney Metro project here in Australia. And in terms of offices, we're now in the US, we're also in Singapore, and more recently, we're excited to be opening offices in Dubai and in London.
Great, thanks, Paul. So, I mean, it's clear that the group is increasing its global footprint, as you say, outside of your home market and into others around the world. But I guess sort of where do you see, or what's your view of infrastructure? Because there's a sort of this ongoing debate as to whether it's a real long-term asset or whether it's a sort of shorter-term buy and sell kind of asset. So sort of where does Plenary sit in terms of what your vision is for the assets you hold, whether, as you say, it's in social infrastructure or light railway like the Sydney Metro you mentioned?
Yeah, we're primarily trying to put to work our development skills, and that's in structuring the commercial structures and the long-term investment structures for these assets, and deploying that in a greenfield environment. And we're also then looking to manage those assets for over the project life. So we really look for those long-term stable investment opportunities. But we're prepared to do the front end heavy lifting with our partners, both contractors and operators, but also with our government partners to ensure that they're successful projects when they're developed, and that we invest and we for the long term, so our partners know that we have skin in the game when we're putting these transactions and project opportunities together.
So it's really sort of, I suppose, if I could phrase it like a bit of an end-to-end solution in terms of overseeing the actual build-up or the build-out and development process of an asset right through to the longer-term management of it. And I suppose in terms of ESG point of view, really looking at the social, environmental, and of course the governance impacts of all the assets that you're operating.
That's right. We really do take, as you say, end-to-end investment lens or a whole-of-life view on the projects that we're involved with, and that more and more brings in the ESG lens. So we look to ensure that, you know, we're a good custodian of those assets in the societies and the communities that they're built in, and we look to ensure that they have good positive impacts. But also from an environmental and sustainability point of view, we're always looking to ensure that the projects, when they're conceived and delivered, are leading edge in terms of what they're doing in terms of reducing greenhouse gas emissions and other environmental issues.
Now, I know from when you and I spoke earlier about this, that sort of the whole climate issue is something that plenary is concerned about a lot. But I wonder how much of that is also coming from your investors, so your sort of stakeholders and partners in terms of driving the direction of the business.
I think there's a really positive dynamic in the private side of infrastructure investment and in the delivery side, where because of a lot of these infrastructure opportunities are competitively tendered, the private sector participants are looking to outdo each other and compete on more than just price, and they're looking for new and innovative ways to reduce carbon footprint or involve social procurement or other sustainability or ESG themes. And that really means that every time we're looking at a new asset opportunity, the bar is getting higher. And I think that's a great dynamic of the infrastructure market at the moment.
Thanks for that, Paul. And we'll touch again on some of the climate issues you mentioned there. But I wanted to touch on some of the other problems, if you like, that I think the global economy is facing right now. And in particular, if I pick off three of them, we're sort of obviously looking at inflationary pressures where we're seeing double-digit inflation, certainly in the North American and UK markets, but also with some severe cost of living issues, and we're expecting some big changes with the UK Prime Minister or the incoming UK Prime Minister announcing a program there. But also we've got some of the big issues related to the Ukraine war with cost of electricity, natural gas supplies, with Gazprom having effectively turned off supplies to Europe, really driving up global commodity prices with all of the issues that affect that, and perhaps particularly acutely within the EU and the UK. And I just wonder what Plenary's view is, and of course your role as Chief Investment Officer, how you see these headwinds panning out in the next few months.
Yeah, there's certainly significant headwinds that we're facing at the moment, Lawrence, and they present a number of challenges. Really, there's two main drivers on the cost side. Obviously, we're coming out of COVID, which has had a big impact on labour markets around the world. And as you mentioned, there's the war in Ukraine. And really what they've done is pushed supply side constraints onto markets, where at the same time we were coming off demand-driven quantitative easing, which really was fueling the markets already. And that's resulted in the inflationary pressures which the world's experiencing, and I'm conscious that some parts of the world are experiencing more than others, but it is a global issue. The problem for the infrastructure sector is obviously costs are higher, and for infrastructure we're a largely reliant on borrowing, and hence money is no longer free. And that's particularly the case for governments. So we're going to face challenges, I think, firstly on the private sector side, where assets that are currently held in various funds, et cetera, will come under some asset revaluation pressure. That is probably going to go through the market in a fairly orderly and slow or gradual pace. But I think in the short term, project feasibilities are what's going to come under pressure for governments as they struggle to meet the demands of their constituents for new infrastructure and the opportunities that they present to communities. They're going to have to wrestle with cost pressures on feasibilities that they haven't had to before, and are going to need to resolve within the increased budgetary pressures that they face, whether to pursue projects or not, and to pick the projects that are going to be winners. And I think that's the real challenge ahead of us.
So I think, Paul, you raise a really interesting point there around some of the fiscal problems that governments are facing right now in terms of access to capital, etc. And I just wonder, from that perspective, do you see that pressure is actually opening the door to more opportunities for private investors to help fund projects, more joint ventures with government, or even just more projects coming onto the open market where they might have been funded entirely by governments previously?
That's exactly right. That's my view, that in this new environment of fiscal pressure, governments will have to manage their budgetary position with a lot more discipline, and that will bring partnering opportunities with the private sector in privatisations, but also in our space of development opportunities, where they may not have looked at doing that previously or have not looked at it for some time. And so we think it's going to be an interesting time for governments around the world, and you know, we stand ready to work through some of those challenges.
Yeah, I think we're four square with you there in terms of our engagement with governments around the world on that particular point. I just wonder, just to build on sort of some of these pressure point issues that the sector and as you say, governments are facing. Obviously, on top of some of the inflationary and cost of living pressures, we've got the ongoing issue of decarbonisation. And of course, across many of the markets that you operate in, there are very clear commitments to reach net zero in most cases by 2050, which will obviously have a huge impact in terms of the amount of investment that's required across the scene. And of course, this isn't just an energy issue. Looking at your portfolio, decarbonisation will include everything from your social infrastructure assets right the way through to rail and other areas. And I just wonder sort of, yeah, how are you looking at this and how are you trying to sort of work through the impact of achieving net zero across your portfolio, which of course, you know, in multiple jurisdictions where there are different targets and different controls on that. Do you think it's a level playing field right now, or are you just sort of saying, well, we as plenary, we're going to achieve this and this is how we're going to do it?
It certainly is going to be a challenge for us and for everyone around the world, really, both private sector and governments. How we get towards net zero with our assets, it's really splitting it into sort of twofold or two parts. Obviously, we've got an existing asset portfolio, and we will be working with our partners on that asset portfolio to adopt initiatives to improve those assets over their life. As an end-to-end investor, we'll be looking at any opportunities that we can introduce innovation and be working through how to implement those. We're probably going to have more ability to impact new developments. And as we talked about earlier, there is this competition between private sector and government around lifting the bar every time there's a new development opportunity around the sustainability measures, but also the social procurement measures. And we continue to look at every opportunity and improve what we're doing and what we're offering our partners in new developments. And I think the third element to it is the achieving net zero and the overlay of energy security is probably going to open up a range of new investments or an acceleration into the investment into renewables, but also the supporting infrastructure around renewables. So we're going to see a lot more investment into batteries, into renewable energy zones, so transmission lines, etc., to support that renewable infrastructure and the goal of net zero. And I think that's an exciting space for infrastructure investors to be involved in as well.
Yeah, I agree entirely. I think across the board, there's great opportunity there. But perhaps that's a sort of a neat segue into a sort of conversation. You mentioned at the start of our chat that you were just opening an office, or you just opened an office in London, targeting particularly the UK and European markets, where obviously energy in particular is under great stress at the moment with Russia's invasion of Ukraine and the ongoing situation there. And yeah, we've just heard Germany has published a 67 billion euro support package for its businesses, and there's talk of the UK Prime Minister having to spend nigh on 100 billion pounds supporting UK businesses. I guess that sort of drives the question is sort of, you know, your confidence is obviously high in terms of the opportunities that Europe and the UK offer. But sort of, I suppose it's a question of how we all navigate some of these short-term issues and look out towards the medium and longer term, which I guess fits overall with Plenary's outlook on life.
That's correct. So we're very excited to be opening an office in London and to be looking at the Europe market more broadly. But our ambition is really to establish our presence, look at, delivering some core skills into smaller projects initially and then build organically from there. We've got obviously great businesses both in Australia and in North America. We've got great relationships there and a great track record, and we really want to build upon that and bring that to the market here. But as you say, recognising that the challenges in Europe are different, the drivers in Europe around infrastructure spending and what will be built over the next decade and beyond will be different. So we will adapt our business to best service that market and best service the partners that we work with.
That makes fine sense to me. So I think sort of the message there is that sort of whilst one would expect there to be plenty of opportunities coming out of these markets in coming years, the issue is that because of everything else that's going on, there is a significant need to be flexible in our approach and to understand sort of some of the underlying drivers there as we move forward. You mentioned earlier, obviously you've got a base in the US and Asia and Australia. Next to moving into newer markets, as we discussed there, like the EU and the UK, what's your sort of outlook for some of your more mature markets, if I can put it like that, i.e. the US and Asia? And do you see similar trends in terms of growth and opportunities, particularly thinking in the US with, of course, President Biden's recently passing two acts, which will make a significant change in terms of infrastructure investment over there?
Yes, in the US, we're very positive towards the opportunity for infrastructure and for private development of infrastructure. The private sector has a large role to play in the infrastructure challenge in that market. But obviously, the US is 50 different markets, and you have to be conscious of that as you move around the US. There is obviously different state-based legislation and policies that you need to be aware of. But the recent announcements and initiatives of the Biden administration do add a lot of positive weight towards delivering infrastructure and involving the private sector. And we just need to work through with the governments that are more actively engaged with private sector to identify qualifying projects for those programs. In Southeast Asia, the markets there are probably a little bit behind what you see, but the infrastructure gap is widening and the economies are maturing. So in the medium to long term, the private sector's role in delivering infrastructure in Southeast Asia is going to be quite a large one, is our firm belief.
Great. I think I'd go along with that. And it's interesting you mentioned the sort of America being 50 different countries, essentially. I guess that sets you up quite well for trying to work out how to operate within the European Union as well, in terms of, you know, the center from Brussels and then sort of the delivery in each individual member state.
That's right. That's right. And it's Australia, albeit smaller, is not that different sometimes.
Yeah, very true, very true. So as we reach the end of our chat, and I don't want to put you on the spot, and I was thinking about this earlier when I was researching our chat, and I know obviously in your part of the world, Aussie rules is central to life, and I did do a quick check to see whether Plenary's interpretation of social infrastructure stretched as far as Aussie rules stadia, where I don't think it does. But leaving perhaps that to one side, I mean, sort of, where do you see the future lying? You know, is there any one particular asset class, and maybe it is stadia, that you see sort of forming a central part of Plenary's strategy going forward, or do you see it as sort of across the board from core to core plus plus in terms of where you'll be looking for your investments in the future?
That's a great intro into we would always love to do a stadium project irrespective of the code, and we actually unfortunately were an underbidder on an AFL stadium in Perth some years ago. So if there are any stadium projects, we do have a few sports nuts in our team here who would love to get involved. But unfortunately, they're few and far between sometimes. I think the bulk of the infrastructure projects, and obviously you're seeing a lot of transport projects, both with and without the private sector, being delivered around the world at the moment. And I think that will continue. The shift in cities away from roads to metros or light rail projects, and assisting the mobility of people, will continue despite the headwinds of COVID and I guess some lower patronage coming off those projects. But the real exciting elements, I think, that we have the ability to get involved in is, you know, post-COVID, COVID has really stressed health systems around the world. So I can see a renewal of investment in health and plenary, both in North America and in Australia here. We've had a lot of successful health projects, so we're very excited about those opportunities. And energy, as we've talked about, the energy sector and the need for supporting infrastructure, not only the renewable energy producing assets themselves, from wind, solar to hydrogen, to the supporting infrastructure. There's a great deal of investment required, and we want to ensure that we can be part of that going forward as well.
Thanks very much, Paul. That was a really good conclusion, I think, to the podcast, just illustrating the sheer volume of opportunities that stretch right from healthcare through to energy, and also just recognizing the scale of some of the challenges we're facing across the global economy, from inflation through to all of the climate related issues, and actually also the growing importance of ESG in terms of being able to win contracts, and the pressures that are coming from stakeholder communities and wider to deliver in terms of our social impact. So a really fascinating conversation, and thank you very much for your time. That brings us to the end of our podcast. So thank you very much and enjoy listening.
Thank you for listening to Talking Global Infrastructure. For more information about GIIA, please visit our website, giia.net, and look out for the next edition of our podcast by following us on LinkedIn and Twitter.